welcome to the Premier Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. On today's episode, we're down to the final four in the competition. Spain, who dumped out the host Germany, are taking on France. And of course, England, fresh off the back of a massive penalty shootout win versus Switzerland, take on Netherlands in Dortmund on Wednesday. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Lawrence and Tom Gallagher. So boys, here we are then, down to the final four semi-finals tonight and tomorrow, and on to the final on Sunday. Laurie, I want to start with Spain versus France. So Spain knocked out the host Germany in the quarterfinals, continued to impress. But France keep grinding out victories and showed their resilience in penalty shootout win versus Portugal. What's your thoughts ahead of that game?
Well, there's no point asking me. I predicted Germany-Portugal would be the semi-final on this side of the draw, which obviously didn't materialise. What I was impressed with Spain, particularly because I sort of think of them as being a good football inside, but maybe when it came down to the crunch against the team like Germany, I thought they'd just get maybe out-muscled and old-manned a little bit and maybe lose to the sort of goal that they actually won with. So to pop up with a sort of cross and a header in the last minute of extra time to win it in the Germans' backyard, I think is probably a feather in the cap that maybe I didn't have for them before and maybe a lot of others didn't. I think probably cemented them as favourites. So, you know, the French not being in form at the moment, Kylian Mbappe being nowhere near his best and seemingly struggling with that broken nose, I think Spain probably are rightfully favourites tonight. And I think that France's luck might run out a little bit on grinding out results and we might just see Spain be too good and win a football match because they're too good for the other side, which is probably how it should be. So very impressed with Spain. French lackluster, but sort of getting through, and I think that might end tonight. So if you want a prediction, I think Spain are going to win. Very impressive. I think they're probably rightfully favourites for the tournament now, and they've shown they can mix it up and win in different fashions.
Look, Tommy, we've obviously had a bit of a running joke about Spain being your dark horses in our prediction, but actually, when you read about Spain, they weren't fancied in regards to the bookies' odds against how they normally would be in a competition. I don't think Spanish people actually thought that they'd go on and do as well as they have in the tournament so far and play how they have. So that's been really, really impressive to see them play how they have so far.
Yeah, and actually, I don't think they've been as like boring, tiki-tacky sort of style as they used to. Like Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams has really sort of given them a sort of a positive, like they go at teams basically. They don't just sort of circulate the ball. And actually, a couple of times, they don't mind playing it long to Morata or whoever might be up there. And so they've impressed in that sense that they've sort of added different elements to their game because we all know that they're very good at keeping the ball, especially with the likes of Rodri, Ruiz and Pedri. I know Pedri's injured now. So yeah, that's the sort of exciting part. I was kind of disappointed in Germany, really, because once they get the equaliser, I thought they might old man Spain a little bit. And it felt like they stepped off the gas a little bit in the first half of extra time. But look, Spain got the job done. We know all about these sort of knockout games. It is all about fine margins. And actually, not even a minute after Marino's header, Fulcrook had a free header and it goes, 6 inches wide? And so, and even though Spain have been really good, I just can't see them beating France. And I've said it all along, France, even though they have been crap, just like England, when you've got a back five or back six like they do, with Saliba and Upamecano centre-backs, Kante in front, Rabiot's going to come back in. They're so solid that they can afford to have players who are playing in the front positions, especially Mbappe, who's having an absolute stinker, and they're still in the semi-finals. And I've just got a funny feeling that they'll just shithouse their way to the final, and I think England will do the same.
Agree with the Spanish style. They've still got that good ball player midfield, but they've got much more sort of dynamism going forward, and that's what's made them better to watch. But just thinking about it, the only thing I would say against the Spanish, I'm not sure which players are out, but I think maybe Carvajal, maybe Lenormand, maybe even Ruiz suspended tonight, Pedri injured, something like that. So if all four of those players are out, that Ruiz is low-key been one of the players of the tournament I hadn't even seen much of him before, but straight away, I think he scored in the first game against Croatia, and he's gone on and been a vital part of that midfield. Carvajal and Lenormand would be one half of their defence gone, and obviously Pedri as well. So that'll be, obviously, that could be a telling factor if France were at pretty much full fettle and Spain are without three or four starters. Which maybe I didn't factor in a couple of moments ago. But on the whole, if they're at the best, I think Spain will give France a really good run for the money tonight. But intriguing battle. What do you think, Murph?
Well, Ruiz is able to play and so is Morata. I think they were two people who kind of in amongst the melee of celebrations and things like that, it looked like they'd been booked and therefore had picked up the bookings that would make them miss the game. But Morata specifically came out after the game and confirmed he hadn't been booked, and so he doesn't miss it. And actually, I know we discussed about the bookings before as well. They reset tonight as well. So anyone who's been previously booked, who got picked up a booking tonight, wouldn't miss the final, which I think is the right thing. It would only be a red card that would make you miss the final. I think you boys might be right in regards to those players missing for Spain might be a big blow for them. And France just seem to have this way of getting through. Deschamps has kind of doubled down on his previous sentiment of, if you don't like the style of play, just don't watch us. We're, you know, watch a different TV channel. That's absolutely fine. It's all about winning. And actually, the guy took charge in 2012. And if they win tonight, by hook or by crook, if they get through, he'll be through to his fourth final in sixth competitions, I think that'll be, in his time, which is just unbelievable achievement. We talk about the success Southgate's brought us, but never got us over the line. That's like an actual tangible success that he's had with that. So, yeah, I think there's a real good chance that France might sort of try and smother Spain, turn it into a really boring spectacle compared to previous Spanish games and maybe make it through. But they are going to have some of their big names step up. You know, Mbappe, he came off at half time of extra time and didn't take a penalty. I thought that was a bit poor from him. He says he's struggling with his nose. Gary Lineker made a comment that he's struggling to sleep with it. Apparently he's picked up a back injury. And really interestingly as well, they've all been getting involved in the politics as well in France, having says on like the election that's been going on there, because they've got far left, far right parties who've been going for it. So they've all been having their say on that. So apparently they're all really relieved with how the results have gone, and they're thinking that that might liberate them tonight. So I just think all of those bits added into Spain's suspensions and the injury to Pedri means that we'll see a boring 1-0 France win, maybe after 120 minutes.
Do you know what though? Honestly, like I don't mind it. Like international football has always been. I can't remember a time where international football has been free flowing, brilliant football that you see week in week out in the Premier League or Bundesliga, La Liga, Champions League. International football is always quite stodgy, and France in particular over the last 6-7 years, they've relied on having that really strong base to work from and to protect. And then you've got the likes of Kylian Mbappe or Griezmann to pull off something special. The difference being in this tournament, Griezmann looks a little bit old. And actually, there's talk he's going to get dropped for tonight in favour of some quick players. And Mbappe's had a tournament to forget. I think he broke his nose in the first game or the second game. And basically, since then, he's not been the same player. And I don't know. I've never broke my nose and played football with it. So I don't know how that would affect you, but he definitely seems to be not going into the tackle as strongly. He seems to be a bit wary of the 50-50s, maybe catching a stray elbow. So he's obviously having a poor tournament, which sort of coincides with France not looking very good going forward. But like you mentioned, they're just so solid and it's all about moments. And the fact that they're in a semi-final and they've not scored a goal from open play goes to show how effective they are, and also, I guess, how poor they played in front of goal.
One thing I would do if I was France tonight is I would get Mbappe out on the left, running at whoever's going to have to slot in at right back instead of Carvajal. I guess it would be Jesus Navas, who's obviously a winger converted to a fullback now. And I would play Dembele, who looked electric when he came on, and I would get him running at Cucurella so fast. I think that's where they might potentially win the game tonight is down the wings. But that being said, Spain have looked very good going down the flanks as well, with Nico Williams and Lamine Yamal. So, yeah, I want to talk it up and say it's going to be a really, really good game between two brilliant 11s. But I'm not so sure that it will be, just based on what we've seen from the competition so far. So I think it will be a tight game either way. But it would really wouldn't surprise me if we do see France in the final come Sunday. And boys, moving on now to the one we want to talk about, basically, England versus Netherlands. Just a quick reflection on the quarterfinal that obviously turned into a great day on Saturday. Laurie, start with you. Obviously, change of formation. I think on the whole, we actually played a bit better. Looked at one stage like we were going out with Mbolo scoring, but obviously answered back straight away and it turned into a great evening in the end.
Yeah. Obviously, fine margins again is one of those that can be an amazing weekend or a crap one. And they just seem to be falling for us in this tournament at the moment. But like I say, it was our best performance. Even just in terms of watching it, it was a good performance. When you play a back three, it's either a three or a five, isn't it? And it was very much a three. The wingers got high. Saka just played like his normal position, basically, at right wing back. He just looked like a right winger, but obviously had a lot more defensive responsibilities, which did well. And what I really liked, like just flashing forward to the penalties there, is like we've bought a squad and we're using it quite well now. Like when we got to the penalty shootout, we were ready. Tony was on the pitch, Palmer was on the pitch, Trent was on the pitch, and it wasn't sort of looking to the old guard basically to try and get you through a penalty shootout. It seemed like it was prepared and meticulously sort of coached, and you're just really confident every time someone stood up to take a penalty. And like all throughout the season, like when you watch players and you think, could they make the England squad? And you hear like pundits like Neville and Carragher go, well, Tony, a good thing about Tony is he's good at penalties. And you think, yeah, but are we actually going to get him on the pitch when it comes to a penalty shootout? But yes, we did. And interesting that Kane obviously came off just before, worked out for the best. And I was just listening to a conversation on TalkSport. If there was another penalty shootout tomorrow night and Kane was on the pitch, would we want him to take one, or would you want the other five to carry on and not change a winning formula? So very, very good end. Good to get the sort of penalty shootouts in the Euros hoodoo off the back. And all's well that ends well. And hopefully we can see some progression with that formation, because I think it suits us a lot better.
Tomo, just on those penalties, I saw something which was that England basically reflected on the Euro 20/21 final where Sancho, Rashford, Saka missed, and they were almost like left to walk back by themselves, albeit the Saka one was the end of the tournament, but certainly Rashford and Sancho. And I saw that even though we were scoring each time, like a buddy was sent from the centre circle, and they were saying that that's something that England have done. They've assigned a player who will walk to go and grab the penalty taker. So regardless of missing or scoring, it then kind of shows that unity between the squad, sends them up knowing that they're not going to have to face the walk behind. So Southgate does get some sort of stick for the tactics and things like that, but he's absolutely meticulous in his planning, isn't he, with things like that?
Yeah, and those kind of things, even though it might seem like a little bit pointless, really, like, but those kind of things are the sort of 0.1% that if you keep doing things like that, then eventually, like, the chances of you succeeding in, say, for instance, like a penalty shootout, they just become greater. And, the only thing I'll say, obviously, as an England fan watching it, just because you think the worst, like, every player goes up and I'm thinking, apart from Cole Palmer, who I just knew would score, everyone else, I was like, oh, there's sort of a narrative there where you could see that they miss. And then, like, even Tony, for instance, obviously, he's got that run up and he doesn't look at the ball. Like, if he missed that, I don't really want to talk about if they missed or not. But, like, you could see the narrative where, like, these players get slated, especially Bukayo Saka. And actually, when Saka's goal went in, I just think you could just hear the collective, like, sigh of relief from the whole country. It was such a lovely moment. And obviously, afterwards, I think he said some sort of life lesson that basically, look, no matter how many failures you go through, you just have to keep putting yourself in the way and just keep moving forward and just putting yourself forward to try and get the positive outcome. So it was really nice for him to score that. And obviously, he was our best player on the night. And Laura's absolutely spot on, even though at the start of the game, everyone, I think, especially online, was questioning whether Saka right wing back would work instead of left wing back. It actually worked spot on because, like Lauro said, he basically just played right wing. And Kyle Walker, so fit and so basically, when like he was able to sort of cover Saka as a normal right back would, and then Trippier on the other side, that kind of formation change, it allowed Foden to get on the ball more. And actually, yeah, we didn't play that well against Switzerland, but we definitely played well in the first half. And there were a couple chances. I know we didn't have any shots on target or anything, but there were a couple moments where, like, the Kobbi Mainoo Xhaka block, like, that's basically a goal. And that's a goal-saving block. But that, just because Xhaka's blocked it, it's meant it's not a goal. It's not a goal.
Shot on target.
Yeah, so... Yeah. So there were a couple moments in that game where we engineered some brilliant like moments that just didn't quite come off. And if they did and we were 2-0 up at half time, everyone would be like an absolute masterclass. So the one thing I will like just note a caution, the second half, we weren't that good. And I know Southgate is like this, but like the whole country was calling for him to make a couple of changes before Switzerland scored their goal. And then Switzerland scored their goal. And what was it, the 75th minute? And then he made three changes. And that's what I think what we've got to accept as England fans, it's going to be quite frustrating to watch, but we're getting the outcomes we want. And actually, people can slag off Southgate and this England team all they want, but they've qualified for three out of the last four semi-finals. They've given us three and all our mates and all their mates and everyone moments that we will never forget. Because, and we never had before that, in the time from 2016 since forever, we've only qualified for three semi-finals. So in the 8 years that Southgate took over, he's taken us to three semi-finals. So these are moments that we will never forget. And actually, I just think maybe we need to stop being so entitled about wanting to be entertained and wanting to be like have this like free flowing, like amazing attacking football for the whole 90 minutes. And maybe we just need to sit there and go, look, England is a top, like watching England is a time when the country comes together and all supports the same thing, which never happens. And it's a brilliant thing. But, and it's only been so brilliant because they've qualified for the semi-finals at least, or the final in the Euros case. So, look, we can all sit there and say, yeah, we didn't play that well. The football's not great. We all kind of know it. And actually, the England players and the squad, they know it as well. But the outcomes, they're second to none. And one thing I will say about this England team, and you will describe every single title-winning team over the last 30 years, is when they don't play well, but they still win, that's a title-winning sort of trait. And this England team is showing that this whole tournament. Okay, I know we've not won. We've only won one game in 90 minutes, but we're still winning the games. We won in extra time. We won the penalty shootout. So that's the only thing that matters, generally. And I, maybe I should stop ranting because I'm getting a bit hot. But yeah.
I think some fair points there. Like in tournament football, it's not about winning the match. It's about winning the tie, isn't it? And I think we've learned that over years. And maybe there's like sometimes, because I'm one of them screaming out for substitutions earlier. We've spoken about it, so we're blue in the face on this podcast. But Southgate's probably thinking, particularly in the games we've played so far, why we're more likely to win than they are if we stay the same, because we're better than Switzerland on paper. We're better than Slovakia, Slovenia. So maybe that's why he's just being reactive. He's changing it if we need to. And by the way, it's worked. He has reacted and it has worked. The changes he made against Slovenia changed, Slovakia changed the game, and they almost instantly changed the game against Switzerland at the weekend as well when Saka replied. So, I think it's probably time we start, you know, giving Southgate his flowers. That seems to be a saying that's everywhere at the moment, and maybe sort of listening to him. He says, by the way, we've just got to our third semi-final. I think it's only the fifth one in the last 70 years or something like that. So, I'm happy to be there. I know there's a lot of people that won't be, but I'm supporting Gareth and England all the way. And just a couple of mentions as well for Mainoo. There was a point in that game, I think there was a pass out from defence, and he just let it run across his body, and all of a sudden he took about four or five Switzerland players out of the game, and we'd gone from defence to attack in 5 seconds. And I just thought, that's our 18-year-old centre mid that sort of like got into the team by hook or by crook. Southgate didn't want to play him. He thought, hasn't played him too much before. Maybe doesn't have the trust yet. Thought he was a bit young, but he's too good. And he's in the side now. And he was brilliant again at the weekend. And also a word on Ezri Konsa, who deputised for Gueye. He had just sort of filled his boots perfectly. It was almost a perfect performance from him as well. So the squad, again, is really good. And probably something that we haven't had in years gone by. When I look back to 04 and 06, you think about your Beckhams, your Gerrards, your Nevilles, your Coles, your Ferdinand. You don't think as much like who was Stewie Downing wasn't coming on and winning us games, or Scotty Parker wasn't coming on and winning us games. The whole squad seems to be affecting the outcome for us now, and that's what we need. So, yeah, things are happening. Gary Neville said after the game, something's happening here. Overhead kick to stay in the tournament against Slovakia, penalties against Switzerland, the side of the draw that we're on. And now it's the Netherlands. And the omens against the Netherlands, I think, are pretty good. I think in one of the tournaments in the 90s, maybe, might have been Italian 90, we had a good game against the Dutch. So hopefully that rings true tomorrow.
Just quickly, Murph, before we move on, I just wanted to mention Jordan Pickford in the penalty shootout as well, because obviously he makes the all-important save. And if you have a look at his record in penalty shootouts for England, I think he saved 4 out of 14. Which is an incredible record when you think about it. And for some reason, whenever I maybe just go like explain sort of what type of fan I am. But whenever like the Swiss player went up, the camera cuts to that sort of view where you can see Pickford in goal. I'm just looking at Pickford and I'm going, fucking hell, he looks tiny. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know whether that's just me being like a negative England fan, but like. And I just think, how is he possibly going to make any saves? But his record speaks for itself. And the reality of sort of, if he can make one save, the type of players, like when you've got those five penalty takers who can confidently score those goals, and Harry Kane's not one of them. Like, so all Pickford has to do is save one penalty. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, well, that's fine. We're going to score them. So just a big shout out to Pickford, because he's never let England down. I know he's sort of a figure of ridicule a couple of times, and he's got a bit of an extroverted character and personality that sort of rubs people up the wrong way sometimes. But he's been brilliant for England. He's been brilliant for England.
The timing of that save was perfect as well. The fact that it was the first penalty, it meant because we'd gone first, every player that came up for us then, it was almost like a weight off their shoulders, because even if they missed, it was just back to level pegging. It wasn't giving Switzerland an advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
So the fact that it was Switzerland's first penalty, it just kind of... I mean, we were watching it in the Arrow and everyone was going mental for every penalty. Didn't seem to be an awful lot of nerves, other than from me, who was just stood there with his head in his hands. But I think because that first penalty was saved, we were just ahead. We were ahead of the game the whole time. And as soon as he made the save, score, and we win. And obviously the boys did the rest. I mean, Ivan Toney's no-look penalty. I know that's been talked about till blue in the face, but to just step up with two strides, look at the keeper the whole way, and still go the same way that the keeper's dived, and still score, unbelievable.
Yeah, he's got a massive set of bollocks on him, but I know he does that in the Premier League all the time. And what he's doing is basically saying to the keeper, I want you to wait. And the keeper's going, well, I have to wait because he's got no run-up, etc. And that's what he does. But obviously, if the keeper waits, then it basically gives Toney the goal. So as long as he picks his spot and hits that spot, he knows it's pretty much always going to be a goal. I don't know. I haven't got his penalty record in front of me. I probably should, considering I'm doing a podcast. But I think he hasn't missed a penalty, is he, in the Premier League? Or maybe he's missed one.
I don't remember him missing one. I was reading something on him today. One of his coaches, probably at Brentford, and he said that when he practices his penalties as well, he takes them from a yard behind the penalty spot. And he says it's because when he gets to the game then, and it's 12 yards out and not 13, the goal looks bigger. So Big Ives, I think, established himself as a real kind of cult hero in this tournament, an ever-growing presence, certainly in Slovakia, and then his penalty against Switzerland. And I think there might be more to the story. So I'm glad to have Big Ives aboard, and I know you boys are too.
Yeah, he's been brilliant, Toney. He spoke about the penalty as well, which is he says he just stares at the keeper because he'll just wait for the keeper to make the first move, and then he can go the other way. And he was like, but then if the keeper doesn't move, he just backs himself to stick it in the corner because the keeper's stood still, which must be a lovely mindset to have for a penalty where it's like, you either move and I send you the wrong way or you stand still and I'll just put it into the corner like he did, because Sommer went the right way and that had to be postage stamp side netting, and it was. On that. Also, boys, I'm going to come on to a bit about the Netherlands games in a bit and potential substitutions we'd bring in for that game. But while we're on the subject of players who did well, Trent as well had a difficult tournament, gets ridiculed about his ability as a defender, had the midfield experiment, which didn't seem to work, but maybe part of a wider problem with England performances meant that he was put part of that blame on him. But to come on in added time when he probably thinks he should be starting the game anyway, over Trippier or getting in over Saka as a wing back, to come on in added time and then to just step up, weight of the nation on your shoulders and just wrap it. I think the second hardest strike there's been of a ball at Euro 24, nearly into the top corner, which regardless of if Sommer went that way, it would have been past him. Tomo, massive set of bollocks on Trent as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the other ones, the sort of when I spoke earlier about the narrative surrounding these players stepping up for the penalty, you kind of have in your head that Trent's not had the best of tournaments. I know it's hard to look good in this England team, really. So you can't really pin blame on individuals. But obviously, because he was the one who was playing out of position and because he was the one playing in that midfield and we looked a little bit disjointed, and because he was the one who was getting subbed off first by Gareth Southgate and then obviously eventually dropped, you could just see like the narrative building where Trent misses that penalty and it's like, a Euros from hell. But yeah, for him to, he's got the best technique in the England team, so without all that narrative sort of background noise, you would back him to score. So it, but obviously the background noise is always there. So, but yeah, look, it's just, it's funny talking about an England sort of penalty shootout where just everyone just was so confident and just, it wasn't even any like, you know, like Eric Dier scored his penalty against Colombia, but it like flicked through the goalkeeper's hands and it was like sort of centimetres away from being saved. It was none of that. It was just pure penalty class. And what I really like is Gareth Southgate bans the England players from talking about their like the preparations for the penalty after the game, the penalty shootout after the game, because obviously they're so meticulous in their planning and like some of the details must be mind blowing, but they're so meticulous in their penalty planning that any little detail that get like hints at like giving Netherlands an advantage in the next game, they just made sure every single penalty taker said, look, I've got my routine, I stuck to that routine, and like I was confident I could score. Like that's basically what everyone said in the post match presser or the post match interview. So I was really happy that they're doing that, because maybe a conversation for another day, but we know that the journalists out there are all there just to try and get a story and just basically just trying to schnut us, really. So,
yeah. Well, look, positive omens for penalty shootouts. I'm not sure I need another one. I'd rather two 90-minute victories in the remaining games if possible. And we can look back on that penalty shootout fondly, because a word of warning is that Portugal had a keeper who looked like he couldn't not save a penalty, suddenly come up against France and not get close to one. And obviously João Félix missing, and there, as the competition goes on, the pressure gets greater. So let's take that penalty shootout, bank it, look back on it in the future as one of the moments that won us the tournament. But I'll just take 3-0 in both of the remaining games, if that's okay. Right, let's look ahead to that Netherlands game then. Laurie, you've obviously been talking a little bit around that move into the back three. Do you think that's something Southgate's going to stick with now off the positive performance, or do you think he might now look to match up Netherlands who play the more back four set up?
I don't know. I really hope that he sticks with the back five, because I'm someone that likes to play to, in any team that I support, just play to your own strengths. We've got the players to do it well and let them worry about us. If we go back to a back four, we're doing it because they play a back four. And I think we're better than Holland, but Holland are probably, well, they're definitely the best team I think we've played on paper. And they've got obviously some very good defenders, some sort of energetic midfielders, and probably the most quality up front that we've seen so far. So I think there's lots of questions to be answered tomorrow, not just the shape, but does Gueye come back in instead of Konsa, who had a really good game probably, but maybe harsh on on Konza. And positively, the one thing I just think is we are due. I'm not saying a razzmatazz performance, but just a decent win. Like, you look at the last like 5 or 6 games, we lost to Iceland 1-0. We beat Serbia 1-0. Then we've drawn every game since. Like, surely at some point we're going to beat someone 2-0. And the more that these players play together and they train together as the tournament goes on, you'd imagine that's better for the cohesion, which is probably the thing lacking at the start that makes those games so much stodgier. And I'm not asking 4 or 5-0. There's actually only been 2 games in this tournament that have had more than 3 goals scored by one team in. I think it was the opening night when Germany smashed Scotland, and then maybe Spain scored 4 against Georgia. So just a nice, comfortable win I'd like to see. I'd probably play a very similar team to what played against Switzerland. If he's fit, as he says he is, I would just swap Trippier for Luke Shaw. I think just the balance of having a left footer on that side, not just offensively, but when you go up the pitch and the ball comes into Shaw, the pitch opens up because the defence don't know whether he's going to go outside or inside, all these types of things. And Shaw's just a really good player who's done it at the back end of tournaments for us before. So if he's fit, I'd play Shaw. Other than that, pretty much the same side. Probably Ferrari Mark back in for Konza, although I don't really mind either way because Konza was that good. And I am envisaging maybe like a 2-0, you know, just a nice 2-0.
I think, Tomo, if he does stick with a back three, listening to Phil Foden after the game, he felt like him and Jude Bellingham had more space to operate in. He could concentrate on staying central rather than sort of drifting in from the left, but having that sort of thought that he should be out there as well. So if we're talking as those two as our two most creative players alongside Bukayo Saka, then that formation seems to work. But there are calls with the performance of Cole Palmer for Foden not to play. Are you envisaging any changes in the forward lines?
No. I don't like, no, just because Gareth Southgate, he has his tried and trusted men. And actually, I think a massive part of this game tomorrow night will be the substitutes, because I tell you, he's had a sneaky good tournament, and that's Wout Weghorst. And every time he's come off the bench for the Dutch, he's changed the game in a positive way. And maybe Daniel Malin, I think he scored a couple goals maybe against Romania when he came off the bench as well. So if you're looking at the England squad, we're obviously a much better squad than the Dutch. When you've got Cole Palmer to come off the bench, like arguably the second best Premier League player last season behind Foden, but if he was in a better team and he was doing that, he would have won the PFA Premier League award, like, or whatever it is. Like, he's that good. I just think Foden showed some encouraging signs in the first half. What I just wish is for Gareth Southgate, and I know this is basically the most criticism I'm going to give him, but I just wish that he would have the confidence in a Cole Palmer just to say, look, Foden, you've done brilliant for 45 minutes. You've not really hit the second ground running. 15 minutes, you've had your 15 minutes, Cole Palmer in, and just have that trust that Cole Palmer can then play the next 30 minutes and potentially the next 60 minutes, because Cole Palmer, it's not like he's a downgrade on Foden at all, really, and especially given Foden's form. I do think this system suits Foden. I do think this system suits Bellingham. I definitely think in that first, and it suits Mainoo as well. And in that first half, we played really good football. And I know people were saying about the stats and the shots on target, etc. But for me, and maybe we're just looking at it from a low bar because we've not played that well all tournament, but for me, that was our best 45 minutes. And Switzerland's the best team we played. Like, they've really impressed. So to go and dominate them in the first 45 minutes and actually a couple half chances or a couple sort of niggles go our way or little deflections go our way, we're 2-0 up at half-time. I think what we've got to accept, though, I know Loro's in dreamland, really, about like having a comfortable win. And there's a part of me that kind of agrees that, look, we are due a performance and due a really good win. But I think, really, as England fans, we've just got to accept that tomorrow's going to be a war. It's going to be a war of attrition. It's going to be real fine margins. Maybe, like, John Stones gets a header on a corner or like, just... it will probably go to extra time. It's just going to be another slog. And it's just whether or not England can get over the line again. I don't think we're going to going to have any sort of any comfortable viewing basically in the second half because we're 2-3-0 up.
So touched on Shaw, touched on Guy, touched on Palmer. I think the only other one which is being spoken about, albeit it's probably tongue in cheek, given it would be replacing England's top goal scorer and captain. But Laura, we've obviously spoken a bit on Big Ive as well. Do you think there's any chance at all that he potentially comes in for Harry Kane, given that Kane looks either injured or just not quite up to standards at the minute?
No, definitely not. But I think in the probably the same mould as what Tigo's just spoke about Cole Palmer, like these games are more like we can almost guarantee they're going to be 120 minutes now. And if someone comes on in the middle of the second half, they're playing just as much as a starter anyway. So I think he's in the same breath as saying Palmer can affect the game late, so can Tony, and he can add a different dimension. I actually think that the system that we're using now, if you were going to start a different striker, would quite suit Ollie Watkins because he likes running in behind. And with Foden picking up space in pockets, he can turn, play the ball through a little bit like Haaland at City. He'll make those runs off the shoulder at angles and, you know, create more like one-on-one situations. He got 20 minutes against Denmark and he got one, didn't he? Went through on goal and the angle was tight. I think he'd be the one that you'd probably maybe start if you were going to change it. And I think the system would suit him. But in answer to the question, no, Harry Kane will be starting because he's Harry Kane. And again, in the same way that we're saying that England are probably due a performance, Harry Kane's probably due to have much more of an effect on the game than he's having at the moment. Albeit, he still scored 2 goals for us.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Laura just said there. I think Ollie Watkins is the one player who you would start. And actually, because there's 5 substitutes now, there is an argument to say, why not just play Watkins for the first 45 minutes and then get Kane on for the second half? Because Kane is clearly not 100% fit. I don't care what anyone says. It's not bad form. He doesn't play this way unless he's carrying a knock. And he's definitely basically nursing a back injury, whatever it is. And he just can't play 120 minutes. You saw it was like playing with 10 men in extra time. And or even like 75 minutes onwards. I know. And obviously, he's got a lot of credit in the bank. He's our greatest ever goal scorer, probably our best ever player. But these players in reserve, I mean, Watkins, I just think he would just hassle and like, and exactly what Lauro says, if he's playing on the shoulder, that means that Van Dijk and De Vrij, their centre-halves, drop a little bit deeper, even if it's 2-3 yards. But that's all, those 2-3 yards, that extra space, is all Foden and Bellingham need. Do you know what I mean? And then they can work their magic and they can either slip balls through, like Lauro says, or create an angle. And as we've seen Foden do many a time for Man City, just smash one top bins. So I know that will never happen. So maybe starting Watkins and talking about starting Watkins is just like a stupid idea. But because obviously he's going to start Kane. But I would rather start Watkins over Tony. I think Tony is more of a Kane replacement or, if you need a goal, like we just need to lump it. And I'm not like trying to downplay Tony's qualities by just being a big man. But at the end of the day, when we need a goal, he'd be a perfect man to bring on. I don't think he's mobile. And he's too similar to Kane to start him, I think.
He's got such a shout now to play, though, Tony, in that second half of the 120 minutes because ultimately, all roads lead to penalties, and he is going to be one of the 5. Yeah. You're going to want, you know, Ollie Watkins might be on the pitch, but suddenly if you're looking around and it's Ollie Watkins going up to take a pen rather than Ivan Toney, potentially it's a slightly different outcome. Albeit I'm sure Ollie Watkins is perfectly capable from 12 yards.
Yeah, do you know what as well, just before we move on from Watkins, if he scores that Denmark chance, like, all the talk would be about Watkins and he would have got so many more minutes. But just because he missed that chance, all of a sudden it's like, can you trust Ollie Watkins when he goes one-on-one? And obviously he scored all those goals for Villa, but like really in these games, you only get one or two. You really only get one really good chance. Like Kane's not really had any, is he? The whole tournament, apart from the 2 goals. So that's the only question mark over Watkins. Is it? He might need like the 2 big chances to score one. So I feel for him a little bit because if he scores that Denmark chance, then his tournament would be completely different.
I mean, Harry Kane might have more chance of getting decent deliveries and chances to score if he moves out of CDM and goes and plays up front. That would be a word of advice to Harry from a fellow striker if he needs it. Get in the POMO, the position of maximum opportunity, H, and you might just get a goal. Look, covered England there, boys. Just want to briefly touch on Netherlands. Tomo, you mentioned about Weghorst and Depay being a bit of a debate in the Dutch media about whether Weghorst should start over Depay. But Cody Gakpo's obviously had a great tournament so far. He didn't get credited for the winner against Turkey, but was very much on the scene and hassling out on that left when the ball came across. And he's someone that if we are going to play a back three and have Saka at wing back, that Kyle Walker's going to have to watch very carefully.
Yeah, and actually, I think if you're a Liverpool, if you're Arne Slot, say, for instance, you like, and a Liverpool fan, you're probably looking at this and his performance at the last World Cup and going, right, Gakpo's a left winger. Like, stop playing in a, like as a striker, because he's clearly performing at high levels at that position. And I think he's so lively and he's got that, because he's right-footed, he's got, and he's so quick, he's got that ability to go on the outside and then clip a left-footed ball, and then all the ability to then cut inside and just absolutely twat one goalwards. And you've seen him score a couple of goals like that. So, yeah, he'll be dangerous. I've been quite impressed with a couple of their midfielders. I know Frankie de Jong was injured, which is, and that Tien Koopmeiners, their two best centre mids, really. But Reinders, for AC Milan looks really good. Shouten, who I confess never heard of before this tournament, just looks tidy. And obviously, Jamie Simmons, he's that bit of flair. I actually don't think he had a good game against Turkey. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because we're talking about three of the four semi-finalists who have not really played well all tournament. I would say the Dutch have probably had 45 minutes of good football against Romania, where they battered them. But that was against Romania, and they won that game 3-0. But really, they were only 1-0 up in the 85th minute. And scored two goals late on because Romania were pushing. Like, Van Dijk's been quite questionable. I know he's probably maybe a tournament too much. I don't know. There's something. He's always had a bit of a tetchy relationship with the Dutch media and the Dutch fans, and I don't really know why. Like, looking from a Premier League perspective, because he's so bloody good. But maybe he's, and obviously we don't watch Dutch games closely enough, because maybe he's just not that good for Holland, even though he's their captain. Yeah, look, it'll be a tricky game, but, and it'll be our hardest game yet, and they've definitely got the sort of the weapons to hurt us. And like I said, I just think the bench is going to play such a big role, because I just think no matter what's like, it will just, my prediction is it will just be such a tight game that Weghorst could come on and change the game. Equally, Ivan Toney, Cole Palmer can come on and change the game in England's favour. So that's why I'm edging towards England, just because our bench is stronger, much stronger, really.
Right, let's do some prediction then, boys. I'm going to give a couple stats before that. I gave some before Switzerland, and they were all in England's favour, actually. Laurie's right, England did win 4-1 at Euros competition, but beyond that, it's a little bit patchy. So England have won just one out of last nine games against Netherlands in 90 minutes, four draws and four losses, albeit England don't seem to be too reliant on winning it in 90 minutes. England have been to added time in both kickoff games as well. Only three teams have done three games in a single tournament. I think recently as well, I think Portugal 2016 and Spain and Italy in the 2020 tournament. And Netherlands also have got a record against England beyond that European victory that we had, where England haven't beaten them in major tournament football for a record going back a long time. So, look, the stats are positive against Switzerland. They look a little bit less positive there for Netherlands, but these streaks are there to be beaten. But that being said, Lauro, what is the score going to be, or the final result going to be, between England and Netherlands on Wednesday evening?
2-0, goals from Saka and Bellingham.
Tomo?
2-1, I think Foden will score, and I think Van Dijk will score, and I think we'll win it in extra time. If you want a prediction for the goal score in extra time, I'll go big Ivan Toney.
3-0, Kobbie Mainoo, Phil Foden, big Ive off the bench, seals it in the 88th minute, shirt off. Boys, that's all we got time for. We'll be back ahead of the weekend, actually, where we'll preview the final. We'll reflect on the semi-finals and let's just pray that one of those teams that we're looking ahead to is England for Sunday. Cheers, boys.
Nice one.
1, 2, 3.